What does your landscaping say about you?
I'm friendly to our planet.
I xeriscape.
I'm water smart.
I harvest rainwater for my landscape and garden.
I'm a free thinker.
My landscape is filled with flowers year-round.
I'm energy conscious.
I water wisely.
Clemente Design Landscape represents your vision with an understanding of what a well-designed and cost-effective landscape can do for you. Call us for a free one-hour consultation and evaluation at 602-540-3773. That's 602-540-3773. Or visit the website ClementeDesignIsGreen.com.
Hi, I'm Paul, and I'm on the spectrum.
And I'm Kim, and I'm an autism specialist.
The second Monday and Tuesday of each month at 3 p.m. on 1010 a.m.
and online at breakradioshow.com, live and archived.
We're here to help you with
Understanding Autism.
At Beerenbaum & Speen PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Beerenbaum and Speen works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
You're a grand old flag, you're a high-flying flag, and forever at peace may a wave. You're the emblem of the land I love, the home of the free and the brave. Every heart beats true for the red, white, and blue, where there's never a boast or brag. But should all acquaintance be forgot, keep your eye on the grand old flag.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Gene Kelly, actually. But no, this is Dave Isaac, Breakthrough Thinking. This is the debut show of What's Up Phoenix, starring Chris Gray. And we've just been really honored and blessed to have so many great people in studio. General Salinas had to leave, but thank you, General Salinas. Of course, we have Don Goldwater in studio. Say hi, Don.
Hi, Don.
Okay, there we go. And retired general, of course, Curtis Jennings. We have Aaron Lambesis. Did I say that right?
Lambesis.
I said it right. Yes. I can't believe it. And, of course, Chris Gray in studio and I think still online too. We have Representative Doris Goodale. Are you still there?
Well, you'll never get rid of me with a chance to say thank you to America.
Well, there's no doubt about it. This is our July 4th special. Tell us a little bit before we get back to Aaron. Tell us a little bit about what you do, Doris, as a representative of Arizona.
Oh, boy, what do? I drive most people nuts.
You sound so sweet. Come on. Right, Don?
She's a good kid. Doris, thank you. You know, I have to say thank you for your service. These are really, really tough times, and we have PTS detoxing for the military, and I think we probably ought to do the same thing for the politicians when the economy finally starts to come back, because you're stuck between a rock and a hard spot. If you do the right thing, everybody hates you. If you do the wrong thing, everybody hates you, and you're just down there doing a tough job.
Well, I served for 33 years with the probation department in Mojave County, so I'm kind of a tough old broad. I can take it most days.
Well, I don't think you're old, but I'll tell you what, you are tough. And thank you again for your service. It's tough. It's just tough. You've got to make the tough choices. You got to keep the government moving. You got to keep the citizens ready, trying to get jobs into the state. Try not to go broke on a lot of issues out there. And you don't have a lot of wiggle room anymore. You know, when the economy was good, you could do this and do that and get away with it. And now it's tough times out there, and it's not going to come back tomorrow. And you still got to figure out how to spend the people's money the best way you can. And I really appreciate your guts for sticking in there.
Thank you. But a lot of people, Don probably knows, that a lot of folks don't see the work you do because a lot of it is battling through the budget that to not take quite as deep a cut here, or how can we help that? My first session, I had the honor of going to battle to protect our service benefits coordinators and keep those from being slashed in the budget. So a lot of times you don't get seen for what you do behind the scenes when you're battling trying to save good things.
You know, I'll ask you the same question, actually, that we asked General Salinas about appreciation. And I think, you know, it's like Don, you were saying that it's gotten better, I think, since the days of Vietnam with appreciation.
Tremendously better, you know, night and day.
Yeah, but how about politics? I mean, does that bother you at all? I think appreciation in the political arena, there's a lot of, on both sides, sort of, you know, it's rough. Let's put it that way. It's tough. I mean, how does that affect you personally?
You talking to me or Doris?
Oh, to Doris.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I try to keep politics out of the service to our country. I think when you get locked into the ideologies, you sometimes forget that there are real men and women out there doing the battle and the families that are left behind. So I try to keep my politics out of supporting my country.
That's good, because it's if you put politics in, I suspect, then you really aren't appreciating the humanness of our military. I mean, they're human beings, men and women, and they're just like us, except putting their lives on the line every single day, and that's good. I appreciate you, Doris, for saying that. Don, I think you had a question for Aaron.
Yeah, You hear about soldiers who have been wounded and or killed, unfortunately, either unfortunately killed or wounded. Let me make sure I say that correctly. But you don't hear about the support groups back home. You don't hear about what it does to the family, what it does to family's friends, what it the downfall in the community. I mean, if you think of some of the people who've just died in Iraq and Iran and the soldiers based out of Arizona and America, but what they could have meant to their communities, or what they did mean to their communities while they were interacted here. What kind of support is there for the family members? You know, because they have PTSD, you know, and the soldier, they haven't even been over there, and they have all these things. Let's talk about that a little bit, because I think that's really important.
Okay, so we'll talk about that. I'll answer your question by stating we have a certain program called a care team. So therefore, what happens is that a soldier is killed. The rear detachment company back here in the States is notified. Then they then will contact the battalion level family readiness group, or we'll just go ahead and say FRG group leader of the fatality. And then I, for example, will put a care team together of four women that I know her, because the military wives is completely different subculture. It has its own rules, its own ways of thinking. It is better than any official program the Army could offer you, to be honest with you.
Sure.
So we come together. I pick out four good women. One is to be there specifically for the wife and the wife only. One is there to help police the media, family and friends coming in. She's kind of like sort of the Walmart greeter, but not too friendly. So we let the right people in and keep the wrong people out. There's one specifically just for the house, and whether that's attending to the children, whatever their needs may be, doing dishes, keeping up with the laundry. Most of the time there are so many casserole dishes, we have to borrow neighbors' refrigerators to keep them fresh.
That's great.
So there really is quite an outpouring of support from the wives to the wives for that wife, because we all know that it could be us.
Right.
And Aaron, does the battalion commander's wife or whatever level of command that have participate in this? The reason I ask, I always found when I was on active duty or thing that if a member was killed, the first people to visit would be the commander's wife with a chaplain or someone like that. And you're right, then the care group would come in because they are marvelous. And you're right, it's a subculture that no one can understand unless they've been in it.
Well, actually nowadays, you brought up a very good point, which I'd like to reiterate on, is that when notification does take place, it cannot happen past 10 p.m. and it cannot happen before 6 a.m. So that's when a lot of women, they get off the phone, they get off the computer and go, "Phew, I made it through another day. I made it through another day." And so we have had people be notified up until 9:50 at night. So when it starts to be 10 o'clock, you know, the nerves start to go down and you think to yourself, okay, I've made it through another day. So I've made it through another day.
That's like living on pins and needles. That's very difficult.
Oh, you know, it almost sounds like a horror show if you think about it. I mean, this would be, you know, they talk about waterboarding. This to me would be more stressful than thinking I'm going to drown, because that's a short-term situation. But to be thinking about the next day and the next day and the next day, and am I going to get the phone call, and, you know, what does that mean? And I'm sure, you know, when we all deal with stressful situations and that kind of situation, you develop a "it's not me" attitude. You put a barrier up a little bit, stuff like that, to try and get you through the situation, which really in the long run, if it happens, makes it that much worse, because you've insulated yourself and then you're just destroyed when it happens to you. Now, is this an organization that the general public can help you with? I mean, are there things that if people wanted to call and say, you know, how can we help you type situation, is there any phone numbers or groups that we can call? Because, you know, it's not just the immediate families that this affects. When we lose a citizen, you know, the closer it gets to home. If we lose somebody out of Virginia, that's a horrible tragedy. When we lose somebody out of Phoenix, Arizona, that we know, that's a horrible tragedy and devastating. And how do we help? You know, I want to help those families, because I want somebody to help me if it happened to me, if something like that happened to me.
Well, usually 9 out of 10 times we establish bank accounts specifically only for the soldiers' children's educational funds. So we set those bank accounts up, and people can then donate to the child's future endeavors.
Okay, now you work with groups like, or people like Sean Hannity, the national TV host. I mean, how do we get down to the local level? If my friend or somebody I know's friend dies tomorrow, God forbid, died yesterday, excuse me, over in Pakistan, Afghanistan, stuff like that, and I wanted to do something, but I was too scared to call the family or something like that.
Right.
What would I do?
Another interesting aspect, which is why technology today is such an Army wife's best friend, is because there are websites that you can go to gain information that people will post on the website, things that people in the local community can do to help. For example, we had a soldier that was killed. His wife was actually one of my FRG leaders. For the funeral and the reception following, a lot of the local businesses offered to do the catering for free. Mm-hmm. Another company decided to donate all the chairs and tents and heaters and / air conditioning devices that we would need to stay comfortable. Churches offered, doesn't matter what denomination you were, a church big enough to handle that type of crowd. And then Fort Campbell, Kentucky themselves has the first Wednesday of every month, a ceremony for all that have been lost. But if there's anybody recent, then they release those names on base as well.
Okay, you mentioned a website. Is there a host of websites out there, or, you know, how would, do I Google military spouse support, or how do I get?
What is the website?
There's very many. There's many of them out there. I'm saying the family will create a website for themselves of wants, wishes, needs.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's very, very small things like, do you think someone could just cut my grass?
Yeah.
Or do you think someone could just, I need to go to my parents' house for a couple of days. Do you think you could just watch the dog for me? I mean, considering what they're going through and what they're asking for,
right.
It's incredible. And they still are just like, well, do you think someone could watch the dog? And you just lost your spouse.
Yeah.
Right. The smallest thing becomes the largest thing ever you can imagine. So, Mrs. Lambesis, you know, obviously the ultimate sacrifice is the worst of the worst. But other than that, to reach out and touch more families, like, say, for the holidays, I mean, you know, say a soldier is gone. Well, I mean, so many of them are gone for Christmas or whatever, a child's birthday. I mean, just whatever holiday, but obviously Christmas being huge to children, mm-hmm. you know, is there something people can do to help with that or, you know, in that in some way?
There are. In fact, I work at St. Joseph's Hospital on the Barrows ICU unit, and there is a female nurse by the name of Tara Trakes. Her husband's military, so her and I, obviously a very pro-military, we send over boxes, care packages to the troops. And so we just kind of adopt different units to support, and then we move on to somewhere else, because then we have so many people that will bring in, you know, Gatorade, baby wipes, toothpaste, toothbrushes, things that they'll need out in the field to
survive.
Aaron, do you think you're getting enough support from the general public, or would you like a lot more?
That's a very good question. I think when 9/11 first happened, my husband was deployed to Iraq for the first time, and we were stationed out of Italy, and our daughter was 9 months old. So when he comes back and we move back to the States, it looked like the 4th of July year round. American flags up on houses, people wearing God Bless America t-shirts. And I was like, God, it's like it's 4th of July in the middle of January around here. And once I had moved back to the States, I realized how the average citizen had become very pro-American. So therefore, that turns into very pro-military and a lot of support. So, for example, there was many businesses that would give you a military discount. If you bought tires, they'd give you 10% off. You went to IHOP to have breakfast, they'd give you 10% off just for being military. So we have felt supported. I do feel that talking with other Army wives whose husbands are active duty, like, for example, my husband's in the National Guard now. So the support is there. It's just not as gung-ho and fresh and invigorating quite on it. You'll probably get 10 volunteers versus 1,500 volunteers. Does that make sense? Does that answer your question?
It does. Yeah, I was curious about that because we want a lot more support. Every day should be like that, especially for the men and women that support our country in the military and put their lives at risk. Aaron, you did mention about setting up an educational fund for children. And Doris, are you still on the line?
Oh, yes.
And I know you're on the education committee. How does that all relate?
I think as the Education Committee, of course, we can all recognize the value of education. We've done some work on trying to improve at the adult level our returning veterans, getting able to return to junior community colleges and universities at some reduced cost. We're trying to extend that to some family members. So we're trying to do at the state level what we can, but nothing will ever replace the local community and what they can offer. I really wanted to give a shout out during this discussion to the great groups like the Patriot Guard Riders, who now are ensuring that everyone coming and going to service is recognized and honored. Our Gold Star Moms, our Blue Star Moms, our veterans groups are really rallying around and putting the shelter of protection around our young men and women who are coming and going from the battlefields.
I was just going to say, Aaron, my law firm has a number of secretaries in it who have husbands in the Guard who have been deployed over to either Afghanistan. And every once in a while, they'll kind of gear up and we'll get care packages together for them, particularly around holidays, and send them out. And it's a matter, you're right, of just local support. Now, the other one is, and I think you're familiar with this, is I'm a member of Phoenix Rotary 100.
Oh, I love Rotary.
And they, of course, have, if you can adopt a battalion, I've never thought about that, but they have, in effect, adopted the first of the 158.
Okay.
And they will, every once in a while, pass the hat around at the Friday luncheon together, money for care packages. They will, I know, mentioned his name, Jay Brashear. Some of you may have known him. He was editor of the Phoenix Gazette. And he's passed away now, but he was very active in the National Guard and was a brigadier general too. And he would get a helmet and pass it around as to gather money for these various things. And then the Rotary will put on a party, I think usually around Christmas, for the wives and the kids of any portion of the battalion that's deployed at that time. And that's a good thing. It's hard in a long war, and that's what it's become in Afghanistan, to keep that interest up in the public for long periods of time.
Yeah, the media has somewhat, doesn't report as often as much as they used to as far as like injuries or deaths. But back to the subculture part of being a military wife, for example, putting a care team together. The wife that I knew, her husband died before she did.
Yeah.
So what happens is they send a chaplain and somebody of equal or greater rank to this her husband's rank. So her husband, let's say, was a lieutenant, and so they would send a first lieutenant or a captain along with the chaplain. And there was, and I would not go for notification, but I know that wife well enough to know that she has three young children at home and she works at Sears. So don't go to her house, because the children are going to, she's not going to have an opportunity to tell her children that their father has died. So that's how I got, it was a big key role in redirecting the notification team to Sears versus going to the spouse's house.
And what position does your husband have in the Guard right now?
He is it's the 158th Battalion Infantry Regiment, and their kind of nickname is the Bushmasters, and they are the most decorated unit in the state of Arizona.
Well, he's a commander, isn't
and
he?
He's the commander.
I wanted to get that in because I think we're very honored today to have the wife of the commander of the first of the 158th. And yes, you're right. If we had more time, give you a little history. The Bushmasters go back to the Second World War as a regimental combat team and fought all through the Pacific. MacArthur praised them as the finest unit of that size in the Army during the Pacific campaigns.
But, and they still are.
That is remarkable. But let's take a quick break, and we'll come back with our special July 4th special event with Breakthrough Thinking and Chris Gray's debut show of What's Up Phoenix. We'll be right back.
Is it important for you to develop a financial plan without the potential conflict associated with commission sales? As a fee-only financial planner, I am paid by you and only you, my client. I'm not compensated in any way by the recommendations I provide. Have you heard the phrase, people do not plan to fail, they fail to plan? My experience has shown that this is too often true when considering one's financial future. If you're ready to take action, call me, Bob Berger, Certified Financial Planner and Certified Divorce Financial Analyst, directly at 602-235-0336. We'll discuss your financial situation and review some small or perhaps large changes that will help you obtain the financial future you desire. Don't let the lack of a plan affect your family's financial future. Call me, Bob Berger, at 602-235-0336 for a free consultation. Again, Bob Berger, Certified Financial Planner, 602-235-0336.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking, the special July 4th event, the debut show of What's Up Phoenix, starring Chris Gray. And we've just been really honored and blessed to have so many great people in studio today. We had General Salinas, retired General Curtis Jennings, Don Goldwater is in the house, and of course, Aaron Lambesis is in studio as well. And Chris, I'll let you do the honors of our newest guest. And of course, we can't forget, and we want to remember, of course, Representative Doris Goodale. You still on the line, Doris?
Oh, still here. Whatever you need from me, you got it.
Oh, good. Well, stay with us, because we got a lot more to go. And now we have, and of course, thank you to Trent Franks, Congressman. He was on at a little bit earlier. Why don't we introduce, Chris, the next guest?
Thank you, Dave. And I really appreciate you, Doris, for calling up and being on the show. And again, we appreciate your service as well. You're welcome. Thank you. I have here with me Captain Dunlap. He's a company commander from the 1158th Infantry, who actually serves with Lieutenant Colonel Lambesis's Lieutenant Colonel Lambesis. And I also have here prior Marine Corps Sergeant Greg Grousseau.
George Grousseau.
Yeah. Sorry about that, Craig. Everything's been kind of starting to get to be like a blur. I really appreciate you guys coming out. And
but you had the first initial right.
Yeah.
That's the main thing.
But I wanted to have as many folks as I could, and folks that I knew and in certain places, and to cover all aspects of it, because it's like Dave was saying earlier, you know, I don't think people really grasp what all is involved in service. You know, I just really don't think, unless you have people in your immediate family and surroundings serving as soldiers somewhere, you know, WMs, WAVES, what, you know, whatever you'd like to call them. They're, you know, also people serving our country. So anyway, that's why I brought so many people together. And it's really been a true honor. And Captain Dunlap, why don't you give us a little bit on your performance and in the Guard?
Yeah, sure. Knew the National Guard as of about 5 years, so not too new. I was on active duty for 5 years before that. Did a deployment to Iraq in 2004, vicinity Fallujah area, and then again in 2007 in northeastern Afghanistan. Been with 1158th Infantry for, I guess a couple years now. And I'm the Delta Company Commander for the Heavy Weapons Company, which is generally goes by Delta Company in an in infantry battalion. And I work for Colonel Ambesis, Aaron's husband. So
heavy weapons.
That's about it. Yeah, heavy weapons. So the state has one infantry battalion. And, most people don't – most people think that everyone wearing a uniform is infantry, but it's actually, you know, the very – I like to say the tip of the spear because I'm in it. But the guys out front. So a small percentage of the military is actually the infantry. And in the state, there's one battalion, and that can be roughly, you know, 500-600 guys. And each battalion has different companies, and one company is mounted on Humvees. Now, these days, you go to Iraq or Afghanistan, everyone falls in on Humvees. But our state has one company of motorized Humvee-mounted infantry soldiers. So that's my company, and they call it Heavy Weapons because that's where the big distribution of 50 calibers, Mark 19s, which is a chain-fed grenade launcher, and then anti-armor weapons such as the tow weapon system, and then, you know, your general crew serve M240 Bravo. So we've got the firepower, and we've got the wheels.
Yeah, if my son hears a chain-fed grenade launcher, he's going to die because, you know, they all do those games, you know, the Halo or whatever, and everything's chain-fed.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's really cool. What's some of your service? What types of tours, you know, what did that entail while you were on overseas on the tour?
Yeah, well, I was a platoon leader in Iraq, and 2004 was roughly when the 82nd Airborne in Al-Anbar Province handed over the territory to the Marines. And that's when, I don't know if we ever had control, but we lost control of Fallujah. And then the Marines were forced out of Fallujah, and then there was a cordon around the city for probably about 6 months or so until the Marines and the Army end up going in October of 2004 for the big Fallujah invasion, which I was not a part of. I left right before, but the first Battle of Fallujah, as you talk about, we were a part of. And then in Afghanistan, I was there for supposed to be a year-long deployment through the surge. It became about a 16, 17-month deployment, and I was in our battalion was the battalion that established the infamous Korngal outpost. So if you've seen the movie Restrepo, that little outpost or that valley, the Korngal, which I think they said at the time 75% of the munitions dropped in Afghanistan was dropped in this valley that was about 5 miles long by, you know, a mile wide. We established the outpost there and a couple of the other outposts in Kunar Province, and pass it off to 173rd, which is the brigade that Aaron's husband, Colonel Lambesis, deployed to Iraq with. So,
thank you. I appreciate that, and I could go on all day long talking about that and listening to that. But for a second, let's get with former Marine Corps Sergeant George Grousseau. George, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your service and perhaps what you do now?
Well, what I do now after getting out of the Marine Corps is I am a financial services professional, I believe, in strategic planning. as far as everyone's business and their personal goals, with whether it be business succession planning or estate planning or just retirement. And I say strategic planner because that stems from my background as a U.S. Marine. I try to incorporate all that into everything that I do. And I'd like to throw a shout out to all the Marines past and present. I'd like to say Semper Fi and God bless America and happy birthday to the United States, because only in this country can we experience and appreciate the freedoms that we have, especially on this 4th of July. I think freedom is something that is very hard earned, and it's one of the most difficult things to achieve. Only after great sacrifice by those willing to fight for it, like our military and what we, the American people, believe in. The only thing harder that I think than gaining the freedom that we have is in keeping it. And I think keeping it is much harder than gaining it, only for the fact that we still need to have the will, the dedication, and desire to fight to keep and save what we have.
And I think a lot of people have forgotten that. I think, I guess I shouldn't be so negative. Maybe I should just say that people need to continue to remember that. It's called freedom, but it's called freedom because you're free for what others are doing for you. So maybe do your part by at least, supporting those that are serving in some sort of service form. Aaron, did you want to say
something? Or those even left behind.
Exactly. That's my point.
Absolutely. One of the things that I can say is if you haven't had a chance to travel outside this country, I've been to several different countries. One of the things I did when I was in the Marines was I was assigned to our U.S. Department of State for approximately 2.5 to 3 years. And I was actually assigned to protect and defend the American embassies. And in doing that, you get to see a little bit of both sides, not just what we have to do in combat and war situations, but we can actually see it from a political side. And we're actually trained side by side with our dignitaries and different government organizations in order to be able to do what we do. And I've been in countries like West Africa, Bamako, Mali, for instance, and I've also served time and done some tours with the embassies in Scandinavia, Denmark in particular. And no other country has what we have here. And I think it's really important to remember. And a question came up earlier that Dave was asking and you, Chris, was asking about, what does 4th of July mean to you? And what I think it is for me personally, I have a profound sense of joy and happiness when I see my family and my friends celebrating on the 4th of July and seeing them enjoy the barbecues and their cold beverage of choice. And I sometimes have to take a step back and step away from all of that and reflect on just how solemn and important that day really is to me as a U.S. Marine and as a veteran, and with all the other military people that are still serving today. And look at that and just keep myself solemn in the sense that we have the greatest country in the world. We have the most wonderful freedoms. And when you ask a Marine what he fights for, I think it's important to understand the three things that we as Marines and as military people, we fight for, and that is God, country, and core. And those are the values that I hold true, ethics and integrity, above all else, except for honor. And I think it's very important for Americans to realize that. And in serving your country, it takes a special individual. And all these active duty military people that we have overseas right now, the ones serving home, the ones that have gotten out, that need to readjust, I think it's our responsibility, not any government organization, but our responsibility as a community, as veterans that have gone before them and now they're coming into a position that we were in several years ago, reacclimating to society, to help them and to do what we can to support them.
Wow, so that's awesome.
That does bring up a question, is how difficult is it once you're out of the military to get back into the mainstream. Is that challenging, George? You want to, or go ahead, Aaron.
It is. My husband was in active duty for 15 years and then decided to get out of the Army because he was tired of deploying. Because basically you're home a year, gone a year, and vice versa. So, and then he joined the National Guard. So we had some pretty significant hills to climb and get over as far as reinventing ourselves in the civilian side of America, because the Army life is such a subculture. Like, oh, a neighbor sees the moving truck, so they come running up. Oh, you want us to let your kids play with our kids in the back and while you unpack? And there's none of that here. I'm not saying it doesn't exist, but it's not how it is on a military base. So there were a couple adjustments that we had to endure together as a married couple and say, you know what, we're not on our own, but you're more on your own.
Is there an adjustment for children too?
Absolutely.
How does that, why don't you describe that? That sounds very important.
The term military brat, I think, has probably been coined the phrase that I hate the most, because military children of military homes are the furthest thing away from a brat. They are tough. They are resilient. They can manage just about anything, if not better than some adults on the civilian side of the world. They're smart. They're tenderhearted. They're very intuitive. They move from state to state. They switch schools in the middle of the year. They have different teachers, different friends, and you know what? They make it.
And they're resilient because of the parents they had. Good ethics.
Yeah. Good ethics, good home, God-based, Christian-based, you know, families that pray together, stay together. So, well, you know, I'm a big believer in that, but that isn't true for everybody. But usually military kids are very resilient.
You know, and Doris, you're still there, right?
Oh, yes.
You are so dedicated and loyal. This is so great. You know, after hearing all these incredible stories, I mean, what's your view on this? I mean, it a lot of people, and maybe some of the people in your district, do they realize what military people really go through? I think unless you experience it, or unless you hear a program like this, perhaps, a lot of people just don't get it. What's your take on that?
Well, in my community, I have Lake Havasu, who is really fighting hard to be known as the most patriotic city in America. They have really surrounded themselves around the military, and I think that's a community that probably has a better understanding. But I agree with you. Unless you've had that experience, I think intellectually you can understand, oh, it's probably hard on the family, but they don't really think you can really understand. Every day you have something to deal with. And I do know my daughter's bipolar, and I know what it's like living every day waiting for the shoe to drop. And the idea that every mom, dad, wife, spouse is sitting there between 6 and 10 every night waiting for, hoping and praying not. I don't know anybody can really understand how that affects a family and how they deal with things like that.
Yeah, that it's very challenging. Yet, let me ask Aaron one more question here.
Sure.
Is what would you say to people? I mean, how do you go about trying to really give the people that really don't know what you go through a flavor of what it's really like, and how do you motivate, inspire people to do that, to get involved?
You mean describe like a typical day?
Yeah, and how do you really get through to them? Because, you know, I think in this, for a couple things, I mean, the fast-paced world these days, a lot of people are just focused on themselves. And with the economy the way it is, I think people really are focused on themselves. It's about, what do I do now? Do they have time to, and they really should, because it's all about giving. I mean, serving is serving. And whether you're in the military or not, serving others should be the first, always the first and foremost. Any comments on that?
Absolutely. First, I would just like to interject and state that the community is very supportive of military, which as a military spouse, and we have two young daughters, we absolutely and totally are so grateful and appreciative for any type of help and support. For example, with the downturn of the economy, there's more single moms out there. You know, people's priorities have changed, and that's totally understandable. But there, you have to kind of keep in mind, and I think it's 4th of July time is the perfect time to kind of reflect upon things and go back and make sure the real reason why we're here and what we're really celebrating is not so much, oh, who brought the beer and the hot dogs, but just, you know, to take a moment out and say, hey, you know what, this is what we're here for. It's the nation's birthday. There's a lot of people still celebrating and fighting for that birthday every day.
And that totally makes sense. And when we come back from our break, we're going to have another guest. And Doris, you stay on the line because we really love it when you when we say, Doris, are you still there? And we like your comments. And we will be right back.
At Birenbaum and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birenbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Ridenour, Hynten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Hynten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is our special Breakthrough Thinking July 4th event. And, of course, it's a debut show of What's Up Phoenix, starring Chris Gray, who is entering the studio again with the military song. Oh, great. Anyway, I wanted to ask Aaron one more question about, I don't even know the statistics, and maybe you know, but military moms and wives that were married, now they're single, but they still have someone, an ex in the military or vice versa. What's that like? I mean, are there special support groups for that? Because that's got to be doubly difficult, I would think, for children as well as the spouse, whether it's a man or a woman.
Well, we have had single moms in our battalions before that, again, this action plan of action has to be signed and in agreement with your commander before the deployment starts. So, for example, if I was a single soldier, mother of two, let's say ages 3 and 5, I would have my mother, my say for example, my mother is going to take care of those two children for me while I am deployed. I have to give her a medical power of attorney. Yeah, I mean, this all the legal things to make transactions in my name. So not only would she act as me, but also as an advocate of my children. So their support for them is a smaller corner of the world, so to speak, but they do have their bases covered with it. It's hard. It's even hard just being a mother and your husband gone. First time my husband left for Iraq, our daughter was 9 months old. The second time he left, our second daughter was 4 weeks old. So he comes back a year later, and this baby's now walking and talking and eating, and he's like, well, what happened? I'm like, you went to Iraq.
Yeah. That's got to be really difficult, I got to tell you, on everyone. And also, you know, the person that had to be deployed because they missed a certain part of the child's life. And that's got to be, well, it's got to be very difficult.
It can be, but you know what? You stay positive. You take it day by day. You surround yourself with positive people. You have to be around positive people.
Well said. And that should be the motto and the mantra for everyone in the world, regardless of what they're doing. You know, watch who you surround yourself with. Now, we have another guest. And, Chris, should I do the honors? Or
sure,
do you want to?
Sir, go ahead.
All right. We have Captain TJ McKay from the fire department. Welcome to the show. Oh, there we go. There's the mic right there.
Thank you very much.
So tell us about what you do, and I guess you have your hands full the last couple weeks here, huh?
Actually, yeah, with the wildfire season that we've been experiencing this year, we have sent a number of our folks out. We kind of backfill for the federal and state resources with local resources. So we've had up to 7 of our local fire department members out on different fires at different locations throughout the course of the last about 6 weeks. Up at the wildfire up north, we had a number of guys crossing back and forth into Arizona and New Mexico, basically doing structural protection and attacking the actual wildfire. And then a couple of weeks ago, we sent a crew down by Sierra Vista to perform the same function down there to help.
See, this is great because, you know, service comes in many ways, you know, in many areas, and your service is tremendous. I mean, and you're seeing a lot of, sadly, a lot of loss also. Chris, you have a comment.
Well, what I was going to say, aren't you also involved with FEMA, TJ?
Actually, yes. I have served as a disaster assistance employee for FEMA for, about the last 10 years. Our group with firefighters, you've got a bunch of folks who are drawn into wanting to help people. So anything that comes up, it doesn't matter really where it is. If something big happens, they're going to want to jump on a plane and go help. There was a group of us when the terrorist attacks happened in 2001. We all grabbed our stuff and jumped on a plane and headed back to New York from all over the nation. 2004, when the hurricane season hit, we did the same thing. We're actually deployed out by FEMA, and myself and another chief ended up running disaster operations for the state of North Carolina, just because we happened to be the most trained at the time that happened to be there.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Hurricane Katrina, we did the same thing.
That's awesome.
Actually set up some disaster response things here at the Coliseum, and my engine company actually helped out with the decontamination and the housing of some of the evacuees from Katrina.
I'd like to also put in a little information on the National Guard. The other side of the coin, besides being a reserve component of the active army and deployed overseas, they are the local military force and disaster emergency force that the governor can call upon. And we have specifically these fires recently. I know the governor sent a number of guardsmen to the fire down at down on the border near Sierra Vista. But we've been doing that sort of thing. The Guard has for many years. Back when I was very active in it, we had a lot of fires, and we got pretty good at deploying them in units and mainly in transportation, getting food, things to the fires so that people could be fed. And we've even set up field showers for the firefighters out there, which, as a firefighter, TJ, I think you'd know it. God, it'd be great to have a shower now.
It's nice to have a shower.
And that sort of thing. And floods, another thing, which we haven't had many of recently here in Arizona, but flood duty is another one. The big equipment that the National Guard has, and again, this is all local disaster support, or disaster, not support, I guess, disaster containment, is evacuating, which you have to do under fires, but also floods down this river. We've evacuated a couple of towns number of times, and that's all there and available to the state when they need it. It's dangerous work, too.
Yeah, again, thank you for your service. A lot of people don't realize, with the fire departments, I have friends of mine, Captain Sager, Steve Sager, Mike Bielman, the support that they do in areas that nobody even thinks about. We had the Super Bowl out here, and I know that your group, and I think Captain Sager was involved in this too, they had to sit down and do security planning. And when we had the Super Bowl, you had to take it in perspective that, okay, let's plan that we're going to have a terrorist attack in Phoenix, Arizona, and somebody's going to try and take out the Super Bowl. Now, how do we make plans, tactical plans, A, to see if we can prevent that from happening? What kind of emergency procedures should a bomb go off? How are you going to marshal your forces? Where are you going to put your forces so that you can support the human population? I mean, it's not just... And I shouldn't just say not just. If you think about this, it's 114 degrees today. I guarantee you somewhere in Arizona there is a firefighter in that heat battling a blaze on top of it. So let's talk about a little bit more encompassing other than what people traditionally think about what the fire department and the police department has to contend with.
And we'll have to do that in about 45 seconds or less since we're at the end of the show, but go ahead.
Okay. Really quickly, a lot of our guys take on a variety of roles. We've got a lot of former military members that work for us that worked with anti-terrorism. As you mentioned with the National Guard, I've got a number of individuals in my department and our neighboring departments who went on active duty service with the military, were deployed to Iraq and Afghanistan. They're still in the National Guard. They get deployed out through a variety of venues. The terrorism stuff, I was actually involved with some of the things at the Super Bowl. Kind of a catch-all group of folks dealing with a variety of things.
You know what, folks? Time is up. I really do appreciate it. Really, really do. And to end it, former Sergeant in the Marine Corps is going. George Grosso is going to read something.
I'd just like to say one last thing before we close the show, and that's in times of danger, when we're talking about terrorism, we're talking about fires, it is our military, our firefighters, and our police that run to the danger, not away from it, to help preserve our most precious resource, which is life. And just as a remembrance, I'd like to read something from Daniel Webster, and it's it goes like this. Although no sculptured marble should rise to their memory, nor engraved stone bear record of their deeds, yet will their remembrance be as lasting as the land that they have honored.
Well, thank you, everyone. This has been a remarkable show. We're out of
America.
Time.
Yeah.
Happy birthday, America. Happy 4th of July. Thank you to all.
America.
And just remember, our soldiers over abroad are in the foxholes. They don't get to have time off. So let's keep our country safe and free back home. We don't get to have time off until they come home.
And happy 4th.
My wife, thank my lucky stars to be living here today. 'Cause the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away. And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today. 'Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land.